श्री शुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणं नृपतिं जगत्पति सत्तव्रतं मत्स्य वपुर्युगक्षये विहर्तु काम प्रलयार्णवे अब्रवीत् चिकीर्षुरेकान्त जनप्रिय प्रियम् Translation. Shukdev Goswami said, when King Shatabrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of the Yuga had assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotees and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows. This shloka doesn't have any purport, so I think I should just read through. Quite a few slokas do not have any purport till 37. That is, six slokas don't have the purports. What do you generally do here? Read through and yeah. Text 32. Sri Bhagavan Ubacha Shaptami hi Addatanad Udadham Ahani Etad Irandam Nimangshati Apaya Ambhudhau Trailokam Bhur Bhubadikam. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, who can subdue your enemies? On the seventh day from today, the three worlds, Bhu, Bhuva and Swa, will all merge into the water of inundation. Trilokang lilayamanayang sangvartambhasi toi boitada upasthashati no kachid vishalatvang mayerita. When all the three worlds merge into the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Tang tavado shadhi sharva bijanachu bana vachanicha Shaptarishi bhi paribrita sarvo satta pabrimhati brinhita arujha brinhati navam vicharishasya biklava ekarnave nira loke rishi nameva varchasa. Therefore, O King, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them on the great boat. Then, accompanied by the seven rishis, and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard the boat, and without morosness, you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation, the only illumination being the effulgence of the great rishis. Dodhuya manang tang navam somirena valiyasha upasthitasya me sringe Nivandhihi Mahahina. Then, as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn by means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side. Aham Tvam Rishibhi Sardham Sahanabham Udanvati Bikarshan Bicharishami Javad Brahmi Nisha Prabhu. Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Brahma's slumber is over. So this is the text 39. 37, and this has a purport. So please repeat after me. Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over. purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, this particular devastation actually took place not during the night of Lord Brahma, but during His day. For it was during the time of Chakshusha Manu. Brahma's night takes place when Brahma goes to sleep. But in the daytime, there are 14 Manus, one of whom is Chakshusha Manu. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that although it was daytime for Lord Brahma, Brahma fell sleepy for a short time by the supreme will of the Lord. This short period is regarded as Lord Brahma's night. This has been elaborately discussed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Loghu Bhagavatamrita. The following is a summary of his analysis. Because Agastya Muni cursed Shayambhuva Manu, during the time of Shayambhuva Manu, a devastation took place. This devastation is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. During the time of Chakshusha Manu, by the supreme will of the Lord, there was suddenly another pralaya, a devastation. This is mentioned by Markandeya Rishi in the Vishnu Dharmattara. At the end of Manu's time, there is not necessarily a devastation, but at the end of the Chakshusha Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His illusory energy, wanted to show Satyabrata the effects of devastation. Srila Sridhar Swami also agrees with this opinion. The Loghu Bhagavatamrita says, Madhe Manvantara Shaiva Mune Shapan Manum Prati Pralayo Ashau Bobhu Beti Purane Kvachid Irjate Ayam Akashmito Jatas Chakshusha Shantare Manu Pralayo Padma Navhasya Lila Eti Cha Kutrachit Sarbo Mannan Tarashante Pralayo Nishchitam Bhavet Vishnu Dharma Tare Tu Etat Markandeyana Bhashitam Manor Ante Layo Nasti Manave Darshi Mayaya Vishnu Neti Brubanaistu Swambhir Naisha Mannate Swami Bhir Naisha Mannate. So these shlokas, there are four shlokas quoted from Loghu Bhagavatamrita. The translations haven't been given, but actually Prabhupada gave the summary of these shlokas before. So I'll repeat the meaning of these four shlokas. Prabhupada is saying, the following is the summary of his analysis. Because Agastya Manu cursed Shayambhuva Manu, during the time of Shayambhuva Manu, a devastation took place. This devastation is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. During the time of Chakshusha Manu, by the supreme will of the Lord, there was suddenly another pralaya or devastation. This is mentioned by Markandeya Rishi in the Vishnu Dharmottara. At the end of Manu's time, there is not necessarily a devastation, but at the end of Chakshusha Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His illusory energy, wanted to show Satyabrata the effects of devastation. Srila Sridhar Swami also agrees with this opinion. So, the incarnation and the activities of Matsya Avatar has been mentioned here. Actually, in last few shlokas, we got the whole story. During Chakshusha Manu, in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus reign over the universe. And when there is a change of one Manu to another, that is called Manvantar. The word is coming from Manu Antar, the change between two Manus. And so when, during the time of Chakshusha Manu, there was a devastation, And at that time, the Lord told King Satyabrata that... So I'll repeat this one again. Anyway, so Sukadeva Goswami said, when Satyabrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of the yuga has assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotee and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, who can subdue your enemies? On the seventh day from today, three worlds, Bhu, Bhuva, and Swa, will all merge into the water of inundation. When all the three worlds merge into the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Therefore, O King, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them on the great boat, then accompanied by the seven rishis and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard the boat, and without morosness you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation, the only illumination being the effulgences of the great rishis. Then, as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn by means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side. Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over. This pastime also has been described by Jayadeva Goswami as Pralayo Payudhi Jale Dhrita Vanu Shivedam Bihita Bohit Keshava Pralaya Prayadhi Jale Dhritavana Sivedam Bihita Bohitra Charitra Makhedam Keshava Dhrita Meena Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare. At the time of Pralaya, Krishna Keshava appeared in the form of a fish to save the Vedas. Actually, those days, Vedas were not written on paper by ink. The Vedas were retained by different personalities. There were great sages, those were exponents of different Vedas. And so by protecting those sages, Keshav or Krishna at the time of inundation, at the time of devastation, save the Vedas. And here we get the mention of these great seven great sages, Shapta Rishis. They are still there. Actually, the constellation that we see in the sky, the seven stars consisting of the constellation consisting of seven stars, is called Shapta Rishi, or they are the abode of those seven sages. Is everyone familiar with constellation? You know the polar star? Then seven stars, actually the two top stars indicate, point out to that polar star. It looks like a interrogation mark, like something like this. Anyway, so that's according to the Vedic understanding, those seven stars are called Saptarshi Mandal, or the abode of the seven sages. They rotate around the polar star. And here also a very nice presentation that at the time of devastation, there was no light. Everything was in darkness. The only light was the effulgence of these seven rishis. So we can see that these personalities are very, very powerful personalities. They're literally brilliant as the sun. They're very, very brilliant personalities. we can see that when one attains, when one develops Krishna consciousness, he becomes brilliant. He literally shines. Especially the devotees can understand that. Like we see a marked difference between devotees and karmis. Karmis look so morose and so run down. Although they may be wearing very nice clothes and very expensive clothes and so on and so forth, but their face looks so pathetic, as if the face looks so dark, in one word we can say. Whereas the devotee's face is always effulgent, because they are connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who is the supreme, the source of supreme joy. And by connected to him, the devotees also become very joyful. And this joy is actually the radiation of light. And I noticed one thing, like sometimes I would see a devotee wearing a wig and walking by, but somehow I would be able to make out that he's a devotee. Although he's wearing a karmic clothes and wearing a wig, in a crowd, in a crowded place, often I noticed while I'm traveling in different countries, I would see some devotee like that and I would just say Hare Krishna and he'd immediately respond. It's an amazing thing. And this is the light actually. And I'm sure when the time of devastation comes, then the whole world will be illuminated by the effulgence of these Hare Krishna devotees, the members of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And actually that's the only hope in this dark age. In this dark age of Kali, there's no hope actually. There's no hope whatsoever. The only hope is this International Society for Krishna Consciousness and this society's devotees. So that's why we have to become very, very serious. That Krishna somehow has bestowed a very great responsibility upon us, endowed us with a great responsibility, that is to save this world. Our number may be few and the opposition may be great, but we have to take up this responsibility with great courage. Actually, if one person becomes pure, he can save the world. And what to talk about so many thousands of devotees that we have in our society. So sure, the world has a good chance of being saved in spite of this degraded age of Kali. So another very important thing here I noticed was that it says that there are only three worlds were destroyed. Bhu, Bhuva and Swa. At the time of inundation, Pralaya, three worlds were destroyed. But actually there are seven higher planetary systems. So that means the planets above Swarloka or Sargaloka, their Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka and Shattaloka, they were not destroyed. Actually the only time that they are destroyed is at the time of Brahma's death. Even when Brahma falls asleep, even at that time, four higher planetary systems don't get destroyed. They remain all the time throughout the creation, the time of duration of Brahma's life. And ultimately when Brahma dies, when he completes his 100 years, then the whole universe dissolves, and then these sages or saintly personalities from those higher planets also go back to Godhead with Brahma. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai. Now, this 100 years of Brahma is a very, very long time. If we calculate, we can calculate simply like this. There are four Chaturjuga, the Satyajuga, Tretajuga, Dwaparjuga and Kaliyuga. So these yugas four yugas, a hundred, thousand such four yugas make a day of Brahma. Now, to calculate the duration of this Chatur Yuga, we can say that Kali Yuga's duration is 432,000 years. Dwapar Yuga's duration is 864,000 years. Treta Yuga's duration is 1,296,000 years. And Satya Yuga's duration is 1,728,000 years. So now, these put together, like say, roughly say 17 plus 12, 17 plus 13, that is 30, and 12 plus 8. So roughly about 5 million years. 5,000 years. That's 5 million years. Make one Chatur Yuga. And thousands of Chatur Yugas make a day of Brahma. And the same duration is the night of Brahma. Brahma's night also has the same duration. Another thousand Chatur Yugas, that is 1,000 multiplied by 5 million years, make a night of Brahma. And according to that calculation, Brahma has his weeks and months and years. And Brahma's life is a hundred such years. So we can see that Brahma lives for a very, very long time. Now one may say, that is just some imagination or just some mental concoction, speculation. There's nothing called, one cannot possibly live for so long. But our argument is that a man lives for roughly for about 100 years. A man should live for 100 years. And for how long does an ant live? The most for a few days. Right? If there are even living entities that live only for few seconds or few minutes. And the ant, who is actually, according to our calculation, is living for only a few days, a day or two, the ant's life has 16 years of youth, 16 years of, say, childhood to reach the youth, and then another 24 years of youth, then another 20 or 30 years of middle age, and then old age of another 30 years. So this way, an ant also lives for, according to an ant's calculation, an ant also lives for 100 years. According to his calculation. Now, if an ant is told that, look, a human being lives for such a long period of time according to our calculation, according to the ant's calculation, then other ants will say, oh, shut up, you are just saying some fairy tales. So, but the thing is that we should not allow our intelligence to become like an ant's. We should allow our intelligence to expand to a little, to a greater extent, and try to figure out that, yes, everything is possible. We should not think that we are the only deciding factor. The way an ant is not a deciding factor, in the ant community, the ant may be very important. But according to our understanding, an ant is a very insignificant living entity. So the same way, in a human society, we may be very important persons, but according to the demigods' calculation, or according to the sages from Maharloka or Tapoloka or Satyaloka, or according to Brahma's calculation, we all are very insignificant. But if we allow our intelligence to reach that understanding, then we benefit. We become wiser. If we believe in Brahma's duration of life, Brahma's existence or duration of his life, or if we don't, that doesn't really affect Brahma so much. But it benefits us. because we can get to understand a higher concept. Then we are able to transcend this small little world that we are living in. Small little earth planet that we are living in. If we think that that earth planet is the center of everything, and ultimately my house is the center of everything, and even then, finally, my body is the center of everything, then we are actually limiting ourselves to a very, very small area of understanding. But intelligent approach is to have overall understanding that this universe consists of 14 planetary systems, and there are so many elevated personalities, those who live in the higher planetary systems, and according to their calculation, things have a much, much greater meaning. So when we understand that, then we can very easily transcend the bondage of our small little world that we are living in. In our practical experience also, we notice that if we limit ourselves to a small area or a circle, then we become narrow. Our outlook becomes narrow. Our knowledge becomes very limited. But we, as we go out, as we expand the field of our activities or the field of our knowledge, our mind expands. And as our mind expands, our consciousness expands. So if our business is to expand our consciousness, then we must allow our intelligence to reach the higher and higher planes of understanding. Like I remember when I first left India and came out of India, it was such a wonderful experience. In India I was living in a small little world of my own with a few friends and few relatives. And then I came out and I saw that this vast world and there are different people, and as I became friendly with those people, I also felt that my world does not really limit only inside India or in Calcutta or so and so forth. My world has a bigger sphere. And so the world that I had, a small little world in a small little city called Calcutta, in an insignificant place called Bengal, in India, all of a sudden, by coming out, I realized that actually I belong to the whole world. I don't belong to a small little place called India or so and so forth. And then as I came to Krishna consciousness, then I realized that I don't actually belong to this earth planet also. If I allow my sphere of activities to expand, then I belong to the entire universe. And ultimately, I actually belong to the spiritual sky. I am not a product of this material nature, and I'm not limited by the coverings of, or the boundaries of the material nature. I belong to the spiritual nature, and I belong to Krishna. And by belonging to Krishna, I get the real meaning of my existence. When we understand that we belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Proprietor, the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Enjoyer, then what a great realization it is. And that's what we understood after coming to Krishna consciousness. When somebody asks us, who are you? So proudly we can answer, I'm the son of Krishna. I'm the son of God. Like we can see that in Christian world, they say that only Jesus is the son of God. Because since they're living in a very narrow world, they could not apprehend that they also are the sons of God. Not only that Jesus is the son of God, but they also are the sons of God. And Jesus taught them, although Jesus taught them that they also are the sons of God, but they couldn't understand it. They thought that only Jesus is the son of God. But in Krishna consciousness, we understand that we all are sons of God. Now, they have forgotten the Father, but we have remembered the Father. They have rejected the Father, but we have been related to the Father. So that is the important criterion. That when one is linked up with Krishna, then he can claim himself to be the son of God. Like, we do not even say that we are sons of God. Actually, our understanding is even higher. The higher than being the son of God is being the servant of God. Or we can even stretch it further. We can say that higher than being the son of God is being the friend of God. And even higher than that is being the father or mother of God. This concept no other religion has propounded. At the most they can reach is that they are the sons of God or the servants of God. That is the highest that they can reach. But in Krishna consciousness, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have got the understanding that we can, or actually we are, some of us are the friends of God, some of us are parents of God, and even some of us are lovers of God. In friendship, one becomes equal. So some people, those who are in friendship with the Lord, they are in the equal platform with the Lord. And those who are in the parental relationship, those who are the parents of the Lord, to them the Lord has become smaller and they have become greater. Actually, this concept is so profound that no other religion has ever even thought of it. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we have understood that, we have become aware of that fact, that yes, some can even be the parents of Lord, and here the Lord, the devotee becomes greater than the Lord, and the Lord becomes smaller. And this is no formal relationship as such, it's a heartfelt relationship. Those who are the parents of the Lord, they think, they're convinced that they are the parents of the Lord, and the Lord is just a young little boy, and unless they take care of the Lord, then the Lord will die. Mother Yashoda thinks that if I don't feed Krishna, then Krishna will die. And at the same time, she feels that if she does not chastise Krishna, then Krishna will become a naughty boy. Right? So when Krishna does something, some mischief, then Mother Yashoda takes some rope and ties Krishna in the mortar. Nanda Maharaj tells Krishna, Krishna, please bring my shoes. And Krishna, like an obedient little child, he carries the shoes of Nanda Maharaj on his head. So this is the most wonderful loving relationship that one can develop with the Lord. The Lord, he becomes their child. And even higher than that is the conjugal relationship. Even higher than that is the conjugal relationship. In the conjugal relationship, the devotee becomes the lover of the Lord. And the conjugal relationship has two aspects. One is a married relationship and the other is unmarried relationship. And among these two, the unmarried relationship with the Lord is even higher. So we can see that this Krishna consciousness, as revealed to us by Srila Prabhupada in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the most wonderful benediction that the world has ever received. So when we become related to Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it becomes our life becomes successful because then we are situated in our constitutional position. We all are lost, meaning we lost our identity. We do not know who we are. And that's why we are, by mistake, we are thinking that this body is ourselves. But when we are when we become related to Krishna, or when you get to understand that we are parts and parcels of Krishna, we are spirit souls, then we become situated in our spiritual identity, in our actual identity. And that is the very foundation of our life's goal. When we become related to Krishna, in our inherent eternal relationship, like everybody is related to Krishna somehow or other, in some relationship or other, starting from an insignificant ant. What do you talk about starting from an insignificant ant? Even starting from a tree. This tree also has a relationship with Krishna. But unfortunately the tree has forgotten, like us, the way we also forgot. And that's why in the material nature we all are suffering. We are, by identifying ourselves with matter, like bhoma ijyadhi jashatma buddhi kunapitridhadite. We identify this, we think that this body made out of mucus, bile and air, these are the three dhatu, kaf, pitta, vayu. Kaf means mucus, pitta means bile, and vayu means air. So this gross body made out of these three dhatus or five elements, like earth, water, fire, air and ether, we are identifying this body as ourself, and the land we are born, we consider that patch of land to be our homeland, and so on and so forth. So this way we are, by being deluded by the illusory energy of the Lord, we are limiting ourselves. We are limiting ourselves into the material nature, we are limiting ourselves into the land we are born, then we are limiting ourselves in the family that we are born, and we are limiting ourselves in the body that we are born. So this way we can see that we are becoming very, very limited. But actually we are unlimited. All of us are unlimited in relationship with Krishna. When you become related to the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we also become unlimited. Although we are minute, but when you are related to Krishna, then we also are unlimited. The way our mind is unlimited. We can see that our mind, although our mind is matter, but it's unlimited. The mind can store inconceivable amount of informations. Our consciousness is unlimited. It can stretch to any extent. So since we are spiritual entities, we all are unlimited. But now we have become limited due to our bondage in this body. So the only way to get out of it is by expanding our consciousness in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means by linking our consciousness with Krishna. Now we are simply conscious of our body and everything relating to our body. But when we become related to Krishna and everything related to Krishna, then our consciousness also becomes unlimited spiritually. So it's very important that the devotees should not be limited by a small little body or a bodily concept or small little boundary of their homeland. That's why it has been warned, it has been reminded that Vaishnav's body or his nationality or his religion should not be taken into consideration. Vaishnav is a spirit soul, and all these material considerations do not apply to a Vaishnav. we can't apply these material considerations to a Vaishnava. Vaishnava is neither a man or a woman. A Vaishnava is not Hindu or Muslim or Christian and so on and so forth. A Vaishnava is not German or Indian. A Vaishnava is a Vaishnava, a servant of Krishna. That is the only identity. So, it is a wonderful world of Hare Krishna that we have been very fortunately included in. We got the membership in the most wonderful society that the world has ever seen. Like, as a karmi, I used to know that there are some clubs, and it's very difficult to get a membership in those clubs. But the most wonderful club is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and we have got its membership. Of course, we have to pay a big price for that. It's not easy to become a member of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the price we pay, what's the price we pay for that? The price we pay is, right, by dedicating our lives to Krishna. And another price we pay is following the four regulative principles. That's also a very important criterion. Unless and until one follows the regulative principles and chants 25,000 names a day, he can't get a membership. He can become a life member. He can stay out. But he won't be included as an inside member. And so we must understand that it's a very great benediction that we received. And also sometimes people feel so proud of being born in a big family. I'm sure in Germany, when somebody is born in a family of von so-and-so, von so-and-so, he feels very proud. Yeah? When somebody is born in an aristocratic family, and by being connected to Krishna, being included in the family of Krishna, we have actually become the members of the most aristocratic family. We have become members of the family of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the king of all the kings, who is the proprietor of the entire creation. So if somebody asks, who is your father? And if we can say that my father is the Lord of the entire world, so how proud one will feel. And Krishna is that supreme father, and Krishna is the proprietor of the whole, both material and spiritual world. And even if we don't go that far, then we can see that our family, actually our ancestry, has so many great personalities, like the controller of the entire universe, Brahma, is our grandfather, great-grandfather, right? Then Narad Muni is also our ancestor. Then Vasudev, who compiled the whole Vedas, he's our ancestor. Then came Lord Chaitanya. Krishna himself appeared as a devotee only 500 years ago. If we go back about 20 generations, not even 20, I think 15 generations, then our ancestry goes to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we have Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, such great personalities, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, who spread Krishna consciousness, who brought Krishna consciousness to the world outside of India. And this line will go on for thousands of years. Our ancestry will be remembered by the people thousands and thousands of years from now. And by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, by the mercy of our spiritual masters, we have been included in. So, actually a devotee is very proud. Because we have so much materials to be proud of. Our pride is not just some hollow pride, a vanity. It is real, like we see Prince Charles, the Prince of England. I mean, he can be proud because he comes from the British royal family. So if Prince Charles can be so proud being the son of Queen Elizabeth, so what to talk about the devotees of International Society for Krishna Consciousness, those who are the descendants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and in direct line, that also in the direct line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we do not display our pride unnecessarily. Like the other day, of course we use everything when it is needed in Krishna's service, but we don't display our pride as such. Basically, since we have so much to become proud of, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned that you become humble. Because Mahaprabhu knew that the devotees can become very proud actually. Like the Jadus, the Krishna's direct descendants, the Jadus, they were so proud that they didn't give a damn about the sages. When they met the sages, they made fun of them. Great personalities, Narad, Durvasa, great sages. But these Jadus were pulling their legs. Actually, because they knew that, who can do anything to us? Krishna is there to protect us. So, same way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could foresee that the devotees can become very proud, because the devotees will have so much, because they are actually the real aristocrats of this world. So that's why Mahaprabhu instructed, Trinadopi Sunichena Tadoriva Sahishnana. Become very humble. Why? Because when there is reasons to be proud, one must make an endeavor to become humble. And it's a natural thing. Like the tree becomes full of fruits. When the tree bears a lot of fruits, then the tree automatically bends down. So the same way a person who is really heavy with his transcendental qualities, he automatically becomes humble. He bends down in humility. So that's the reason we have to be very humble. And actually a person who is really qualified with many good qualities, he can be humble. He alone can be humble. And he should be humble. But at the same time, we also have to display our, in our heart of our hearts, we must be aware of our great heritage, that we are actually the most aristocratic people in this world, although we may look a little weird with our shaved head and saffron robes, and even people may laugh at us, but they won't be laughing for too long. Soon a time will come when Krishna consciousness will spread all over the world, and then when people see shaved head, saffron clad devotees, then they will give them the greatest honor. Like the other day, some people asked me, why we indulge in such opulence of riding big cars and living in big houses. So my answer was that, see, in Delhi is the capital of India, and the best area is the place where the embassies are, foreign embassies are. And the people involved in foreign embassies, they drive the best cars, right? So I pointed out that, look, they live in the best area and the best possible houses, and they're riding the best cars. Why? Because they're representing some state, right? So if some state in this earth planet can display such opulence, what to talk about the ambassadors of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And it is not that these embassy people make the arrangement themselves. It is the state that take care of them. It is the state, even before they come, the state gets the house, the state sends the car, the state sends all kinds of facilities to them. In the U.S. consulate, the U.S. embassy, they even send water from America. Even the water is sent from America. I don't know about Germany, but in India they do. Probably they don't even trust Indian water, Ganges water. They think that if they drink too much of Ganges water, then they'll become too spiritualized. So they protect them by sending their mineral water from America. So same way the devotees are being taken care of by Krishna and Krishna's associates. They make all the arrangements. We are not going out of our way to live in a big house. We are happy living just under a tree also. And although we are living in big houses, how do we live? Like yesterday when I was going around, I just saw the Brahmachari Ashram. Although it's a nice house in Heidelberg, but the Brahmacharis live so simply. So that is the mood of a devotee. Although the facilities are coming, they don't really care. They're happy sleeping on the floor. And they don't care about big cars and so on and so forth, but they simply use it in Krishna's service when Krishna gives it to them. So if these embassies can enjoy so much facilities, then obviously devotees also will enjoy a lot more facilities because they are representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, well, Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
You were talking about the relationship of the devotees also Krishna. Now my question is, how do we come into this relationship again? I read in Bhagavad of Upadi Shamrita that a guide, a Vrindavan resident, he's not our guide.
Yeah, I can try. You see, to get the entry to Vrindavan, one has to surrender to some personality in Vrindavan. But that surrender is a spontaneous thing, right? You see, our relationship with Krishna is an inherent thing. It's there in us. The spirit is already related to Krishna, right? And as we render devotional service, we get purified, right? And as we get purified, that means we shed out all our material coverings, right? And as then our identity begins to develop, or we become aware of our identity. And it is not actually that we try to relate ourselves to the personality in Vrindavan. That personality comes down to us. When the time is ripe, he comes to take us there. Right? And Gurudev is that personality. Guru is that personality. And the Guru will reveal the devotee's or disciple's identity in due course of time. Right? So that's why we have to understand that the spiritual master is not just a living entity from the earth planet. We must understand that my spiritual master is an inhabitant of Vrindavan, an eternal associate of Krishna. Right? And in due course of time, he will take me to Krishna in Vrindavan. No, it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
It's like this. There is one devotee, with Krishna Das, who has a certain relationship with Krishna, and there's another devotee, Chaitanya Das, who has a certain relationship. So, a different relationship than Krishna Das. Now, you said the spiritual master, he will. Now, he's on the
Yeah, it's actually a very pertinent question, very nice question. And it's true. The thing is that we have to understand that the spiritual master cannot be limited by his material form, right? We must not limit him in thinking that, well, I mean, this body of the spiritual master is the spiritual master. See, he is a spiritual personality from spiritual sky, right? And he has his way of taking us back to Godhead. So I understand your point. You may say that somebody may be related to Krishna in parental relationship, and somebody may be related to Krishna in friendship, right? So how the same spiritual master can take two different personalities in two different milieus? To Krishna, right? So here, the understanding is that a person related to Krishna in parental, he will see the spiritual master in parental relationship, right? He will see, say, Nanda Maharaj or Jasoda Mai in the spiritual master. And someone who is related in friendship, he will see Shubal or some friend of Krishna in the spiritual master. It's actually inconceivable. Or another thing can also be, anyway, we can leave it up to that. You know, like this is how the spiritual master acts. You see, I had this understanding because Prabhupada once chastised a devotee. One devotee came, an Indian devotee, is a householder. He came to Prabhupada in his room in Mayapur. And I was the only one with Prabhupada at that time. So he came and very hesitatingly he asked Prabhupada, what is my rasa? So Prabhupada got very angry. He said, you rascal, your rasa. Prabhupada just kept on chastising him for a long time. And then finally he said that, don't worry about your rasa. Just keep on rendering devotional service to Krishna. And when the time comes, I will personally come and reveal your rasa to you. Right? So, another aspect is that, you see, devotee sees the spiritual master according to his melo. This also I had the understanding from one writing of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying that he sees Radharani in Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, He's seeing Radharani in Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Now, if you take the identity of Gaur Kishore Das, spiritual identity of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, then he is Guna Manjari. He is a Manjari. He is not Radharani. He is an assistant of Radharani. Right? Assistant of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Manjari. So how come Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is seeing Radharani in his personality? So, but he is Radharani is manifesting to him through the spiritual master. Right? So this is actually inconceivable. With our reason and mundane intelligence, we cannot really fathom it. Right. We have to leave it up to when the time comes, it will be revealed. Right? Intellectually, we cannot really analyze it. No, what I meant is, if a devotee is related to Krishna in friendship, in the mellow of friendship, then the spiritual master to him appear as some as a friend of Krishna. Right? Because the spiritual master will take him to Krishna in that mood. But generally, whatever is the mellow of spiritual master, his disciples also have the same mellow. Right? It is the arrangement of Krishna that if the spiritual master is in the mellow of conjugal relationship with Krishna, then his disciples also have conjugal relationship to Krishna. That is the basic general understanding. Because the disciples are actually the rays of the spiritual master. The part and parcel of the spiritual master. Like in the spiritual sky, Krishna's devotees have different groups, right? Like Shubal, say his friend, has his associates, right? Now all the associates of Krishna are also related to Krishna. All the associates of Shubal are related to Krishna or Balaram in the same mood of friendship. Also there are different groups of the gopis. They have their associates, assistants, right? Like Lalita has his group, then Vishakha has her, Lalita has her assistants. Vishakha has her assistants. So, and their assistants are also unlimited. Right? So, the same way, the spiritual master, the disciples are his assistants. So, whatever is the mood of the spiritual master, the disciples also have the same mood. Is that clear? Yeah. Is there any other question? Okay, so all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you all very much. All right.